Good day, and welcome to the SCO press conference. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the call over to Mr. Blake Stoell. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good day, everyone, and thanks for joining our teleconference today. We have on the line with us David Boies from Boies Schiller Flexner, Dahl McBride, President and CEO of SCO, and Chris Sontag, Senior Vice President and General Manager of SCOSORS. Before we turn the time over to them, I'd like to just let everyone know that the press materials are made available on sco.com in the SCO press room. You'll find our press release there. And if you have any follow-up questions following our call, feel free to call anyone from the SCO PR team or Schwartz Communications. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Dahl McBride, President and CEO of SCO.
Okay, thanks, Blake. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining our call. I'd like to start by updating you on recent developments at SCO. After my comments, we'll then take your questions. SCO's legal counsel, David Boies, is available on this call to help address questions that you might have regarding SCO's legal position. In May 2003, SCO warned Global 1500 companies that enterprise use of the Linux operating system may violate intellectual property rights in the Unix operating system. Today, we confirm that fact. Enterprise use of any Linux distribution based on the 2.4 Linux kernel contains software code that was misappropriated from Unix. This directly violates SCO's copyrights and contract rights in the Unix System 5 operating system. Linux contains hundreds of files of software code taken directly from Unix System 5 or from derivative works protected by Unix System 5 licenses. This infringing code falls into three categories. First, literal copying of Unix System 5 source code. Second, literal copying of code from Unix System 5 derivative works without authority. And third, non-literal copying of the structure, sequence, and organization of Unix System 5. Much of the infringing code deals with new multiprocessor capabilities inside of Linux. This isn't a matter of changing a line or two of code. If all of the infringing code were removed today, Linux would have little multiprocessor code left and would be totally ineffective for enterprise use. The infringing elements found inside Linux are all protected by U.S. and international copyright laws. SCO announces today that it has registered all of its System 5 copyrights so that it can enforce its copyrights in situations where it becomes necessary. IBM and others have tried to minimize their own copyright litigation risks by not becoming a direct distributor of Linux. For the first time in the history of the software industry, IBM and others are proposing that corporations adopt a major operating system that has no intellectual property warranty. The net effect is this. By not providing a warranty, IBM and others have profited from Linux and at the same time have shifted the risks to the end users. They have shifted the legal liability and associated costs of running unlicensed software to the end users. SCO is trying to find ways to help customers solve this problem, balanced against our own legal rights to stop infringing uses of Linux. Under U.S. and international copyright law, end users are subject to injunctive relief and damages for improper use of copyrighted works. With registration of its Unix copyright, SCO now has broad legal rights against end users with respect to infringing use of the Linux 2.4 kernel release and any future release of the Linux 2.6 kernel. However, we intend to use these rights carefully and judiciously. In the past weeks, many Linux users have asked us how they can immediately resolve issues with Linux without litigation. This is clearly the path SCO prefers to take in resolving its issues with end users of Linux. Therefore, as a viable alternative to legal enforcement against Linux end users, SCO is prepared to offer a license for SCO's UnixWare 7.1.3 product for use in conjunction with any Linux offering. Specifically, Skoll will hold its licensees harmless and will covenant not to sue such licensees for running Linux in binary format on any CPU licensed under a valid Skoll UnixWare 713 license. This licensing format will assure that Linux users are able to run Linux in full compliance with Skoll's underlying intellectual property rights. In making this license available to end users, Skoll does not waive any of its rights against IBM or others. This UnixWare 713 license offering is designed to give immediate relief to customers using Linux so that customers can focus on their business issues without concerns of violating Skoll's intellectual property rights in Unix. The pricing of such license will be dependent on customer path and future usage of Linux and the number of servers that currently run Linux. We are working through the details now, and we'll be discussing them with customers in the coming days and weeks. As with any licensing program, volume discounts will be made available, and every effort will be made to assure that licensing fees for UnixWare are fair and reasonable under the circumstances, while appropriately compensating Skoll for the unauthorized misappropriation of its intellectual property rights. Okay, at this point, let's go ahead and open things up for your questions.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you are on a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that's star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause a moment to assemble our roster. We'll go first to Dan Gooden with Bloomberg News.
Good morning, Darrell and David.
Morning, Dan.
I had a couple questions. It sounds like for the first time, Darrell, I am hearing you say that Linux violates Skoll copyrights. I've heard you guys typically say it violates your IP rights, but you stop short of copyrights. Are you saying for the first time that people using Linux are violating Skoll copyrights? And if so, what has changed? What allows you to now predicate copyright law as opposed to contract law or some of the other things that you talked about in the past?
Sure. I'll take the first shot at that, David. Definitely this case started off as a contracts case. When we filed it in March, we were very clear that we had contract violations that we were concerned with. We were going and had tried for months to resolve with IBM, did not get there, and that ended up in litigation. With respect to the copyrights, very clearly this is news as of today. Very clearly we've been talking when we sent out the letters in May. We sent out letters letting them know that we had found problems inside of the Linux kernel as it related to our intellectual property. Today is really the formalization of our going down the path of broadening our case to go beyond just contracts but also to include copyrights. So what's new today is the copyrights have been registered. We've received a copyright registration notices back from the U.S. Copyright Office. And so essentially, the legal fairway that we're working with here just got a lot wider.
Our next question comes from Peter Galley with eWeek Magazine.
Hi, Dahl. How are you doing?
Good morning, Peter.
Hi, Dahl. One thing, if enterprises or business customers decide that they still believe you have no legal basis for this action and that they're going to wait it out, there's no legal enforcements on your part at this point that you can take against those customers because the initial case against IBM hasn't been solved yet, and you would then have to litigate on a case-by-case basis with each of those enterprises. Is that correct? You're asking them to voluntarily step forward and agree to this.
Yeah. So, again, back on the first point here on the IBM case, that was a contracts issue, and very clearly, we feel good about where that case is going. We're making a good headway there. Today's announcement really is a new front that we're opening up. The first case has to do with people that we have relationships with, i.e. contracts. In this case, with copyrights, we have broad enforcement capability with those that we may not have direct relationships with. And so as we go forward, our goal is not to litigate. We've had a lot of dozens of people that have come to our Source Code Viewing Center in Linden, Utah, to take a look with their own eyes, and people have weighed in, and everybody that's come out there and made the trek has come to the same conclusion, which is, yeah, we've got a problem here in Linux. Rather than going out and saying, well, let's just go sue everybody now, we're coming out with a well-thought-out, a carefully planned program that will help deal with the next issue that end users have, which is, okay, I've seen the code, I understand their problems, now what do you want me to do? Well, the answer is real simple. We have a solution here for you that gets you clean, gets you square with the use of Linux without having to go into the courtroom.
Well, go ahead.
Just to follow up on that, obviously, at some point, if people did not come forward or this was not otherwise resolved, there would have to be the possibility of some case-by-case litigation, although I think that it is unlikely that you would have to have very many of those cases before some resolution was reached. I think with respect to the first part of your question, it is not necessary to resolve the IBM case before resolving, or if it were to come to that, litigating with the customers. The issue with IBM is a contract issue originally. There may also be copyright issues with respect to IBM, but whether or not the IBM issue is resolved does not give the individual customers the right to engage in conduct in the interim. If the conduct is improper, the conduct is improper, even if it has not been held to be improper yet in the IBM case.
Our next question comes from Dean Takahashi with San Jose Mercury News.
Hello. I had a couple of questions. Can you more completely describe the offending code and its origins and, you know, like when it got put into Linux, by what party, you know? And then also, what kind of cost is there associated with getting a valid license for the customers?
Yeah, with respect to the infringing code, we see the three different types that are out there. You have the direct line-by-line code that is showing up in there, and it's very stark when you lay down the Unix code base and you lay down the Linux code base and you look at them straight across, you can see absolute 100 direct line-by-line copying that's taken place, including developer comments, errors, typos that were in the developer comments, so it's very stark. That type of code has come from various vendors, and that type of code is coming from vendors primarily other than from IBM. With respect to the next category of code, we would call the derivative works area, we're seeing a lot of code that has come in just the last year or two, and that has to do with a lot of the SMP high-end scalable technologies, the NUMA technology, or non-uniform memory access, RCU, read, copy, update. All of these are technologies that allow you to really take a multiprocessor configuration and go big time with it. In the early days of Linux and the 2.2 kernel, before it really grew up, you would get 2 to 4 processors running simultaneously. And now when we go to 2.4 kernel, you see 16-way, 32-way configurations. With the new 2.6 kernel coming out, it even jumps up higher than that. So you see incredible enterprise-level scalability going on. Now, the other thing that's interesting here is when you compare the amount of source code that was contributed by vendors in 2.2 kernel versus 2.4, which just came out a couple of years ago, you see in the 2.2 area there was literally no contributions, and since 2.4 has come out, the number of files, not just lines of code, but the number of files that has been contributed by our Unix vendors is in the hundreds. So that's the the second bucket. And then the third bucket is one of non-literal infringing areas of methods and concepts that are still protected under our rights. And that's a broader bucket beyond the first two. With respect to the pricing, we're talking to customers beginning this week. We're going to get out with more detailed publication of that pricing model later, but we can tell you that it's benchmarked off from our UnixWare licensing structure that's out there today.
Next is Don Marty with Linux Journal.
Hi. I am looking at a quotation from one of the professional C programmers who's actually participated in the source code review program.
Right.
And that is Ian Lance Taylor. Excuse me. And he writes, sorry, I had to run to make this call. He writes, looking around the net, I found close variants of the code with the same comments and variable names in sources other than Linux distributions. Will SCO offer any additional evidence to substantiate the claim that there is code in Linux copied from UnixWare?
Sure. We've shown one example out there today of hundreds of files that are infringing. We'll absolutely be showing that. In fact, we're showing that today. The code that's showing up there today in large part is not even disputable or questionable because IBM has put its stamp on it. When they contributed the RCU code as an example, they were kind enough to put their signature on there. So a lot of this code isn't questionable with respect to where it came from. With respect to whether it's a derivative work, they even indicated out there this is a derivative of Dynex. And Dynex is a derivative. It is a flavor of the Unix System 5 source code that we have. So, we feel very good about being able to defend that. In fact, the people that have come in and taken a look at this I've weighed in on the same side. Let's be real clear here. We're not talking about BSD code. We're talking about high-end SMP code that has been donated in just the last year or two that has not made the rounds through the BSD or the university settings or what have you. And we're not even talking about Linux 2.2 code. We're talking about enterprise-level Linux that has taken our System 5 source code in a large way.
Next is Todd Weiss with Computer World.
Hi, Donald.
Hey, Todd.
How you doing?
Great.
A couple of quick questions. Again, what was the name of the license that you had there?
The license that we're offering?
Correct.
We're just calling that it's SCO's UnixWare 7.1.3 product that we're basing that off of. So it's the SCO UnixWare 7.1.3 license. And that will be basically what you're talking about here is a runtime or run only license that is a binary license that gives it basically ties in directly to where our UnixWare license is today.
We'll go to Richard Waters with Financial Times.
Good morning. Can you tell us a bit more about the rights you now have if you establish copyright? For instance, what penalties can you rise here, and against whom, and how many legal actions are you planning? When are you planning them?
Yeah, David, that's probably more of a legal side issue. Do you want to take that one?
Sure. Give me that again because I'm not sure I understood it exactly.
Yeah, sorry. If you've established new rights now that you want to use to back your case, then...
By new rights, you're referring to the copyright issue?
Copyright, that's right. What are the penalties for breaching that? What sort of extra claims do you think you have here and against whom, and how are you going to make those stick?
Well, the copyright laws provide a wide range of penalties. There are statutory penalties that permit you to recover a amount per violation without having to prove actual damages. In addition, if you can prove actual damages, you are entitled to recover those as well. There are also additional penalties for what are described as willful violations. And I think one of the the points of what the company is doing is to try to make sure people are aware of their obligations in the hopes that they will decide that they do not want to knowingly violate the copyright laws.
We'll go to Robert Mena with Copper Beach Capital.
Yeah, quick question, and I'm not sure how you can answer this, but what is the implication for some of the Linux distributors like a Red Hat? What does this mean for them?
Well, this is a complicated arena we're talking about here. You have code that is protected under our source code agreements with vendors that is going into the holder of Linux, into Linus Torvalds, and then there he's surrounded by the open source development labs. You have OSDL. Then you it goes on down the line to a distributor of Linux. Then it goes online down to a hardware vendor of Linux. And, you know, after, you know, many machinations, it finally ends up in the hands of an end user. You know, David, as I understand the copyright side of this, we have broad rights against anybody who is touching that. Well, clearly, it starts with the end user because that's where the copyright is being held. And, you know, no decisions have been made about where we would go if we don't get recourse from the path that we're on now. But my understanding is it's fairly broadly available to us.
It is, and under the copyright laws, you may sue both for infringement and what is referred to as contributory infringement, which is that if anyone contributes to somebody else's infringement, that is somebody who can be sued directly under the copyright laws. So that if a third-party distributor was found to have engaged in conduct that contributed to an end user's infringement, that person would also be liable under the copyright laws.
Next is David Bank with Wall Street Journal.
Hi, can you just tell me a little more about the process for these copyrights? Did you just now start the process to register them, or had they been registered earlier? And if they weren't registered earlier, why not?
So we just started filing the registrations here some weeks ago. Essentially, you know, you can own the copyrights, but if you don't go, you typically go a lot of times to go register them when you expect to go through an enforcement action, and that's where we are right now. So we filed these recently, and the major ones that we needed to embark down this path of enforcement have been returned back. So we have received the major filings back, registered with the U.S. Copyright Office as of last week.
David, this is David Boies. The copyright laws do not require you to have registered intellectual property in order to obtain copyright protection, but having filed and received back the registration is a condition precedent to actually bringing a lawsuit. So that what you often have are people, and indeed we found that, as you may remember, in the Microsoft case to some extent, where copyrighted or copyrightable material was not filed until there was some need or desire to actually bring an enforcement action. So what you have them doing over the last few weeks as the possibility of bringing enforcement actions has become more of an issue is to make the filings that are not a precondition to having a copyright but are a precondition to having the right to enforce it in the courts.
We'll go to Wolfgang Gruner with Tech Channel.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question regarding the enterprise level. You guys, I think you emphasize really the enterprise level. However, as I understand it, when you talk about Linux kernel 2.4, there are a lot more people using this kernel, not just enterprise level people, basically every Linux user out there. Are you guys going to go after every Linux user, or are you going to go after enterprise level users? And if you would go after private users, would you cover that through partnerships with Linux distributors or some sort of alliances?
I suppose there are a lot of options here in terms of how we go down that path. I will tell you our first and primary concern is comes from the commercial users of Linux that are benefiting greatly from this from a commercial aspect. And so that is really going to be our starting point. With respect to where the next points are, the folks who are using Linux at home or doing things down that level, that's not the direct path that we're going after right now. It's really all commercial users who are benefiting from this is really where we are concerned.
Our next question comes from Laura Didio with the Yankee Group.
Hi, Darrell.
Hello, Laura.
Quick question. One of the things that we've been hearing since you first filed this suit is a lot of talk from the Linux community, which harks back to some of the questions we've heard earlier, on how can you be so sure that this code and the derivative code did not come from BSD, Unix, or other versions of Unix and Linux, et cetera. And second part of the question is, have you had any conversations with the Linux gurus like Linus Torvalds about this stuff?
Sure. With respect to the first question, it's an interesting question when you step back and ponder who really has the capability to understand where all the code bases are coming from and how which ones are protected and which ones should be protected and which ones aren't. By virtue of the agreements we have in place with our vendors, we're in a unique position where we have the ability to see into each of the code bases from the vendors that we have agreements with, and each one of those code bases individually are protected. And so we put our code programming teams together. We have three different teams that have gone in. They've looked at all of the major code bases out there, and we have a very strong understanding of which components are infringing and which aren't. Is there an element of BSD-isms out there, if you will, that would be in Linux today that would be a tougher legal case, or in fact a case where it is in fact not protected? Yes, we would agree with that. Is Linux 2.2 kernel more similar to some of those things? Yes. As it relates to Linux 2.4 and beyond, there are absolute high-end multi-processing capability that has not made any of these other realms that is highly protected. That is really what we are talking about. So that's really the answer to the first question. Second question, with respect to Linus, we've had several email exchanges over the last couple of months. With respect to Linus, I think that he has actually done a pretty thoughtful job of coming out and articulating some things that I would agree with. We agree on the point that this case started off as a contracts case against IBM. Point well taken. He, secondly, has ascertained that the case up to this point was not about intellectual property or copyrights. Point well taken. As of today, it's a different game. And so, again, from Linus's perspective, I think he studies this stuff out pretty well. And, from a going forward standpoint, he has chosen, up to this point, he has chosen not to look at the code from a confidentiality or non-disclosure standpoint. And I understand his position. But from a going forward standpoint, we do have these copyright issues we have to deal with. We're not even saying that Linus created the problem, but clearly he's inherited them, and now it's going to be a question of how these things get worked out from an infringement standpoint.
Our next question comes from Reed Stevenson with Reuters.
Hi, good morning, Darrell.
Hey, Reed.
I have two questions. I guess the first one would be for David Boies. Is there anything you can say on the status of discussions with IBM, whether, in your view, the probability of litigation or court trial versus a settlement, how that's coming along? And, Darrell, my question to you would be, given the number of Linux installations out there, and you know, even capturing, let's say, a small percentage of the 2 million plus installations could potentially have a significant impact on your income outlook. So I was wondering if you're prepared to change earnings guidance or provide any financial outlook at this point in time.
This is David. With respect to the status of what's happening at IBM, I really don't have anything to add other than what's been published already. As a litigator, I always assume these cases are going to go to a court resolution, and that's really what I'm preparing to do.
On the financial side of this, clearly the copyright protection we get here is significant in terms of the value to our company. The ability to seek injunctive relief and damages relief from end users, all the way down to the amount of the price of the product that you would have sold for the similar infringing product, is pretty significant when you take the over 2 million servers that are in the marketplace today on just 2.4 kernel, according to IDC, and you multiply that against a Unixware type of a pricing model, obviously this becomes a multi-billion dollar problem. In terms of going out and putting something in place that allows us to get recourse against this, that's where we're going next. We really do hope to get this resolved in a friendly way. We're dealing with a large marketplace. The world has shifted to a game of Unix on Intel, which is what SCO was about for 20 years. Now it's shifted into a game of Unix on Intel for free called Linux. And that game, I suppose that works as long as you're clear on the intellectual property side. But the moment that you cross the line and you're using our valuable intellectual property in pushing that free product in the marketplace, then we have a problem, and that's where we are today, and that's what we're trying to get some recourse on. But clearly, on the earnings side, the guidance side, we'll reserve some of that. We're going through the discussions on the financial modeling of this as we speak, as we get into probably as we get into our call next month, we'll be prepared more to talk about what that means to us going forward.
We'll go next to Steve Shanklin with CNET.
Hi, guys. Hi, how you doing?
Great.
Yeah, I was wondering, earlier you had argued that, no, we're still a products company, all this intellectual property stuff is just a sidelight, we're not just becoming an IP shop, but particularly in light of this action today, and the fact that Linux has succeeded in the marketplace where Unixware has pretty much faded into almost complete obscurity, it certainly seems to me that you're becoming more of an IP shop, and I'm wondering if you would agree with that assessment. When you talk about, potentially capturing the Unixware revenue off the Linux installed base, it seems to me that that would be far more significant than your Unixware or open server revenue.
Yeah, that's a good question, Steve. If you look at this company 3 years ago, we were nearly $250 million in revenues and growing at a point in time when this Unix on Intel thing was just going to boom. And then instead of our revenues going up, they went down. So the product that has been damaged here, Unixware, is the very product that we're going after to get intellectual property recourse to. So at one level, I guess you could say we're going down the path of an IP side. Another discussion, you'd say, well, we're just getting recourse against our product that was damaged in the marketplace illegally. So I think maybe the other way of thinking about this is we have 330 employees inside of the company, and the majority of those are working on the product side of the business. So whereas our product side is still moving strong, what we are getting a huge uplift with right now is the IP side of our business and enforcing that. So it's a little bit like the large vendors out there that have strong IP shops. IBM collected $1.5 billion last year. Well, they had another huge business on top of that, obviously. And so what's new here is that we're just layering in. We're coming in reverse. We already had the product side going, but we weren't doing any of the IP licensing side. We're now layering that on, but because there was such huge damages done along the way, clearly the upside of this side of the business would be greater than the product side at this point in time, so I agree with you on that.
We'll go next to Jonathan Collins with BNU.
Hi, guys.
Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Just a quick one. Doesn't this move to copyright the Linux that's already out there go against the GNU organization and the way that they copyright Linux? And do you have to get permission from them, or are you open to counterclaims from the GNU organization?
I think if you look real closely at what we've done here, Jonathan, we've put in a runtime-only license, a run-only license on the binary side of our Unix product. This basically allows users to run both of these licenses parallel with each other without conflict.
And how does that, perhaps you could explain a bit more about how that doesn't leave you open to...
So in other words, with the GNU license, the GPL license, you're talking about licenses that are source code, that are openly modifiable, distributable, you can make copies of, etc. But really it comes down to the source. The source is what you can take and modify, redistribute, etc. With our license we're talking about here with UnixWare, we're talking about a binary license that protects you to run our intellectual property that's out there, but it, in fact, does not conflict with the source-style licenses coming down the GPL site.
It does not protect those who are touching the Linux source code.
Right.
We'll go next to Thor Olivesrud with Jupiter Media.
I'm sorry?
Hi, guys.
Hello, Thor.
Hey, cool.
What sort of deadline have you guys established for these companies to buy a license before you're going to consider litigation?
Basically, they are saying that for every computer you've got running Linux.
Looks like we have some feedback coming in there. We haven't set a deadline on that right now. We're rolling this out. We're talking to users over the next coming days and weeks here. We will be more formalized with our actual pricing on this after some of those discussions move along, and we'll just see how it goes.
We'll go next to Gordon Half with Illuminata.
Hi there. I have a question around the derivative works. Is SCO contending that any contributions from the various Unix OS vendors are inherently infringing, even if the code in question was entirely developed by the Unix vendor?
No, not at all. We are very clear on if you look at the Linux kernel between 2.2 and 2.4, it jumps from a couple of thousand files up to over 5,000 files. And a large increment jump or large reason for the jump there is the huge number of files that came from vendors that we do have system 5 source code licenses with. Now, just because there are thousands of new files showing up from vendors doesn't inherently create a problem with us. But when we take very clearly works that are protected under our derivative works, or in other words, when they take a development path on our System 5 kernel and expand that and create a derivative work and then turn around and donate it, that is where it creates the problem. And that's the area that we are saying that we have hundreds of files. Now, if there are thousands of files that have come from vendors, we're saying that there are hundreds that we deem to be under these protective clauses on our derivative works.
We'll go to Larry Greenmeyer with InfoWeek.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Just wanted to find out the difference between the licensing of UnixWare for the actual end users and the licensing and how that would affect the distributors and vendors of Linux.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I had some feedback coming out of my site. Could you try that one more time?
Sure. How is this licensing program that you're proposing going to affect end users versus the Linux distributors? Will Red Hat have to pay you for each Linux distribution that it sells, and the customers also have to pay you, or will it just be one license per use of Linux?
Right. No, this is very targeted towards the people who are using the product, which is the end user. And, I think from the end user standpoint, it's a run-only license. It protects them. It gives them the protection that they need. And as we said earlier, I mean, this is unprecedented that a product has shown up in the software industry at an operating system level where you're building an application on top of this platform. You have this platform, and you're building your applications on top of it, and you're receiving it from a vendor with no warranty attached to it. And so I'm guessing that those end users are going to be looking around to the vendor or vendors involved in supplying that to them, whether it's Red Hat or IBM, and saying, well, what's up, guys? You know, what's happening here? But, you know, that's going to be their beef with their particular vendor. So, again, this is a run-only license, and it doesn't have anything to do with the source level distributions that's coming out of the vendors there.
Next is Gavin Clark with Computer Wire.
Hi.
Hello, Gavin.
Hi. One might seem like a really basic question.
Hello?
I just wanted to make sure, what exactly has been copyrighted? Was it the multiprocessor capabilities of System 5 and the
hello, hello.
Stuff? And also, just a sort of more background check, what was, you mentioned other, you kept saying IBM and others. I wondered if you had any more insight onto who the others were yet, if you're planning additional legal action. And also, any more news on licensing for Unix? We had Sun and Microsoft recently. I wondered if any other Unix vendors had kind of licensed, had come to you to kind of bed down their own licensing yet.
So on the copyrights we received back, it's basically Unix System 5 licenses as well as our System 5 copyrights as well as our Unixware copyrights.
Right.
And so they're various versions out there, but we have a substantial number of those covered with the registrations we received back. The other ones are in process and soon to be received. With respect to question number two, I'm trying to remember what was the issue there. Oh, okay. As far as the other vendors, we do have discussions. I actually had a very positive visit to Tokyo last week, had a good visit over there, and we are dealing with this issue. It's been a lot of an educational exercise for the most part to go out. System 5 vendors we do have contracts with, so they don't have to actually even sign the non-disclosure. We already have confidentiality protections in place. So we have shown them the code. People understand the problem, and the focus of the issue right now really has turned off from one of is there a problem to what are we going to do about the problem. That's a substantial amount of discussion that we have right now. And the final point, what was the final question again? The licensee that we had talked about before was Sun. So we had basically in the last quarter we have deals that were done with Sun and Microsoft. We have deals that are in the works with other large vendors. We're discussing in Japan. We have other vendors here in the U.S., ongoing discussions here. And so we are basically encouraged about the way those discussions are going as well.
Due to time constraints, we'll take our final question from Jennifer Follett with CRN.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hello. You were talking earlier about contributory infringement. I was wondering, would that also create liability for VARs or integrators that might be implementing Linux? And if so, do you have plans to pursue litigation against those people?
I think that it could include those people. It would depend on the circumstances, but certainly in a number of situations, it contributory infringement could include those people. As I think was said at the outset, I think what the company is interested in is a resolution of this issue that protects its copyright and intellectual property rights without litigation. If litigation is necessary, I think the company has shown in its suit against IBM that it's prepared to do that, but that is not the first or even second choice. You get to litigation here only if the other choices don't work out.
Okay.
That concludes today's question and answer session. Mr. McBride, I'd like to turn the call back to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay, thanks. We started down this path a few months ago. Very clearly, we started off on a contract concern that we had with IBM. We did not get resolution with that concern. That ended up in litigation. In the process of moving down that path, we have really gone through with a fine-tooth comb what is going on inside of Linux and what is going on inside of our Unix code base. And that has, in fact, generated this wide range of infringement problem that we're dealing with here today. So to summarize what we've announced today, we've registered our copyrights to protect our Unix intellectual property. We have a very strong ownership position, obviously, in the Unix IP. We now have the registered copyrights to go behind that. SCO's Unix IP has been misappropriated into Linux. And if anybody has any more doubts about that, you are more than welcome to come and visit our viewing office in Linden, Utah, or we're having a conference in Las Vegas on August the 18th. You're welcome to attend that conference, and we'll be glad to show it to you there as well. SCO has given customers the ability to gain a license to run Linux legally on a run-only basis. So as we found the violations and the problems that were there inside of Linux, we came out and stated to the world in May when we sent out the letters that we saw a problem. Immediately we had a strong wave of attention and requests around, show us the code. In June we showed people the code. That is still going on. After seeing the code, we had a strong reaction from customers saying, I want to continue on with Linux. Is there some way we can work this out without having to just have it tied up in the courts? Is there some way we can work it out without having to go in and rip out the implementation I've been working on? We have others that we're aware of that we're in the process of implementing, and now they've been in a hold pattern. We think that this allows both parties' concerns to be met. We are balancing the needs of the marketplace and the demands of the marketplace with our demands and our rights to protect our very valuable Unix-based intellectual property. So that's where we stand today. We look forward to getting out in the marketplace and getting these issues resolved. We said last month that we would come out in July with a program to be able to allow us to move forward. We're starting that here today. We will be announcing the finalized pricing of that within the coming days or weeks. And so that's where we stand right now. I'd especially like to thank our lead counsel on this, David Boyce, for joining us here today. And David, I don't know if you have a final comment or two you want to make.
No, not really. I think that obviously we've made a lot of progress since this started in identifying the specifics of the use of SCO's intellectual property and copyrights. I think that what the company did was begin with those claims, like the contract claim against IBM, that it had certain evidence of. And there were concerns and questions, and the company was public about those. But what has happened since is that we have taken those concerns and, by investigation, discovered what the actual evidence is. And I think what you see today is a reflection of the developing evidentiary base that the company has developed.
Okay. Thanks, David, for those comments. And thank you all for joining us here today. And we look forward to getting out in the marketplace and getting these issues resolved. Thanks, everybody. Have a good day.
That concludes today's conference call. We thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your line at this time.